What is up, everybody? Adrian M. Gibson here. What you're about to hear is the audio version of a live author panel recorded during TBRCon 2024, the latest edition of FanFiatic's all-virtual annual science fiction, fantasy, and horror convention, which streamed live between January 21st and January 28th, 2024. FanFiatic and TBRCon had the pleasure of hosting 25 amazing author panels, and we're so happy to be able to provide the audio for you for free here on the podcast feed. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy this fantastic TBRCon 2024 author panel.
Okay, so everybody who's here with us, thank you for joining. This is the panel on atmosphere and place in horror, and we'll get into it pretty quick. But before everyone introduces themselves, I'll go around and just ask everyone to introduce themselves. I want to say that, as if I wasn't shitting myself enough already, the Stoker Award preliminary ballot for 2023 came out yesterday, and three of our panelists are on there. So I just wanted to take a minute and recognize them. Johnny Compton, his book, The Spite House, which I happen to have right here, is on for, I believe, Best Achievement in a Debut Novel.
Yes.
As is CJ's book, Mayfly, which is currently, my copy is currently on loan. And then Chuck is listed on Best Achievement in a Novel for Black River Orchard, right, Chuck?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
And of course, Haley, who couldn't be here with us, she had an emergency at work. She won the Stoker Award back in 2022. And Catherine won the, and correct me if I'm wrong on this pronunciation, I've been to Wales twice, Aberystwyth University Prize for Short Fiction?
Yeah, Aberystwyth.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, hey, look, that's my introduction. I'm going to go clockwise on my screen, which may be clockwise on yours as well. First off, CJ Lead, can you just give us a little introduction?
Hey, CJ Lead. I wrote Mayfly, which is like a little like princessy slasher. And that came out last year. And I have a book called American Rapture coming out in October. And I live in LA with a bunch of rescue dogs and my boyfriend.
And Catherine.
Hi, everyone. I'm Catherine McCarthy. I'm an author of dark fiction from Wales, UK. I live here with my artist husband. I've written quite a lot of stories and published quite a few books this year. The Wolf and the Favour, Mosaic, and A Moonlit Path of Madness.
Excellent. Chuck.
Yeah, hi. I am Chuck Wendig. My most recent is Black River Orchard, but I also wrote Wanderers and Wayward and The Book of Accidents, and a middle grade called Dust and Grim. I'm sick right now, so if anybody hears that, this whole thing that's in my head right now, I apologize. And also I'm very distracted by birds. There's a lot of birds right here, which you can't see, but I can see
them. I've got a bunch out here too. I basically became old man bird watcher over the pandemic, and yep. I put out like bird seed cylinders, and I've got like, guys, I've got a monocular. Okay.
Yep. Nice.
all right. Enough bird talk. Johnny.
Hi, Johnny Compton, debut author of The Spite House. I've written some short stories as well. Extraordinarily happy to be here. My second book, Devils Kill Devils, is coming out in September, so looking forward to that as well.
Congrats, Johnny. Real quick, my name is Chris Panettiere. I like to think my best days are ahead of me. I have my debut novel is called The Phlebotomist, this hot pink number. And then my really debut for full-throated horror is called The Redemption of Morgan Bright that comes out from Angry Robot Books in April. So that's me. So this is a panel on atmosphere and place in horror, which I think is just an awesome topic. I think it's one of those things that's kind of hard to pin down. And when I was trying to figure out, boy, how do we dive into this conversation? Often people spend 10 or 15 or 20 minutes or the whole time going, well, what is place? What is atmosphere? And so I thought, well, let's start at the far end of that. Let's assume we already know what it is. And I've asked our panelists to give us some examples. So when we talk about place and atmosphere, I thought it would be cool to start small and maybe ask each of our panelists to give us an example of a book or two or three that really stood out to them for its atmosphere or its particular setting, and explain why it stuck with you since you've read it. So I'm not going to call on people. If you have something to say, if you want to start off, go for it.
I'll jump in.
Go, Johnny.
There you go, John.
We're so very similar. me and CJ have met a couple of times, and we have this thing.
On a wavelength.
Yes. I was, when I was thinking of this, the one that jumped out to me, Michelle Paver, who's written two books that are really great with atmosphere and the setting. I think they're both excellent. The better of the two and the more probably lauded of the two is Dark Matter, probably. But I have a fear of heights, it magnified it even more. That thin air really got to me. Both of these books are set in very inhospitable, very extremely cold places, hard to get to. And Thin Air is set in the Arctic, Dark Matter is set in the Arctic. Thin Air is actually set in the Himalayas. And it really magnifies the idea of the horror. There's not a whole lot of mountain horror that I can think of that's out there, especially set in the Himalayas and not necessarily involving the abominable snowman or the Yeti or something like that. And it just really adds this incredible additional element to what makes the story already frightening, and the spirits that are haunting the place and the history of the place. The idea that also you're in this extremely treacherous, inhospitable, unforgiving climate.
Yeah. So you're already sort of nervous going in, even before you introduce any bad stuff. You could just fall off the mountain.
Yes, exactly. And she does an excellent job, I think, of then when she introduces the bad stuff, it doesn't just set aside the setting. It incorporates the setting into what I think is one of the scariest scenes I've literally ever read. Once we get into the history of the place and find out why there's so much bad psychic supernatural energy here, it's really one of the most horrific deaths that I could imagine somebody going through, an ordeal somebody could go through. What happens to somebody who is, I don't think it's a spoiler to say this is a ghost story, so there's a ghost present, and who is haunting the place and why they are there and what happened to them is really just brutal, and it incorporates the elements and the setting and the environment extraordinarily well.
Okay. That sounds so good.
Yeah, I almost chose that one, Johnny, so I'm glad I didn't. It's on my shelf.
Great minds.
Yeah.
CJ.
I found it, so it was like hard to narrow it down. First, I thought of Anne Rice, because like the way she always wrote New Orleans is, I think, just like you don't even ever have to have been there. It's like in every story, it's just like you smell and taste and hear everything. But I did recently read Nat Cassidy's Nestlings. I don't know. Have you all read it? Oh my God. It was like, if you've lived in New York, even visited, like, it's a city that it's like you love it and you hate it, and there's so much to love and there's so much to hate, and it's so invigorating, and also like you're so trapped all the time, and it's like all of this at once. And I felt like he used that all the way, and I felt every bit of it, and like the sort of glamour and glory of having like one of these old school, you know, totally beautiful decked out apartments, but also like the sort of decay of places like that, and how you can feel so trapped, and like, you know, add to that the main characters in a wheelchair, and like the fire escape situation is like really kind of creepy, and you know, there's like, it's an old elevator. So I thought it was I felt like I was back in New York. And I mean, I live in, other than today, like full sunshine all the time now. So it was a really cool experience.
Well, if I can jump in real quick, CJ. So in Mayfly, there's, which is fantastic, you've got this sort of, at least I read it as the grandmother's sort of opulent mansion almost, this really nice, I read it at least as a very kind of nice house that Maeve lives in. But the presence of a comatose individual put a lot of weight into it, that even if the place itself is nice, it added this air of dread. And so that kind of makes me think of what you just said about nestlings. Of on the surface, it seems to be a very nice sort of environment that you have turned on its head almost.
Well, that's what's so exciting, right? Is like any place we choose to set these books in, like they're horror. And also like we know bad shit's going to go down. And it's almost like whether you go with like the most horrific kind of setting or the least horrific, it's like there's always something that it adds, which I find so thrilling. Like a mountain story, I'm just like, I just love the mountains, you know. to me that's like safe place, happy place. So I feel like I'm gonna have to go read that now. I'm so excited.
Okay, how about Catherine?
I think one of the things with horror, I just literally had to browse my shelves to come up with this one. But what I think I came down to in the end was the fact that the definition of horror is so personal. And so, you know, while something might scare somebody, it might not be frightening at all to someone else. So I've actually chosen a short story to sort of exemplify this. It's a Ramsey Campbell story called Recently Used. And I first read it in Eric Guinard's, I hope I've pronounced his name properly, the Primer series that he collated, though it's probably been published elsewhere as well. And it's set in a hospital. So, like, if I can give a bit of a personal story why hospitals are my personal fear, it's just, you know, it's something that I connected with and it's stuck with me ever since, because when I was about 12 years old, I got pushed off a mountain and actually dropped about 14 feet. So my foot exploded and just became this huge balloon within minutes. But I had dislocated my hip, but I didn't realize that. And so I was back in for hospital for over a year, walking on a dislocated hip. And they didn't discover it for a year because they just thought it was my foot that was the problem. So I ended up having my hip rebuilt with pins and plates and staying in hospital at the age of 12 for over a month. Now, I was fine with all of that. I coped with it really well, but it sort of set in a phobia of hospitals afterwards. And I sort of came through that okay through most of my life until then my mother was diagnosed with a terminal brain tumour. So that sort of, it all came back to me again because we were permanently in hospitals. But in Ramsey Campbell's story, it's about a man who receives a phone call telling him to hurry to hospital because his wife has had a serious accident on an escalator while she was out shopping. And what follows is like this real surreal claustrophobic panic attack inducing nightmare that uses the hospital setting in a sort of loopback structure. So really at heart it's a tale of survivor guilt because the main character feels that he's neglected her because he wasn't there when it happened. But the way Ramsey Campbell describes the hospital, it's like, you know, the sort of impersonal nature of hospitals where no matter where you turn or what corridor you go down, you end up getting lost. And, you know, like he's looking for his wife in intensive care, which is supposed to be on A block. And now the letters change on the wall. And it was just so horrific on a personal level for me that I really felt it hugely. And that's one that stuck with me ever since. So I highly recommend everyone reading that.
Hospitals have been rough for me ever since I saw, which one was it, Exorcist 3, where the scene down the hallway, yeah, where she's, I mean, where the person passes and then you see her coming behind. Yeah. Oh my God. And that's
underrated movie.
Totally. And that's those corridors, man.
It is. Yeah. And Kingdom Hospital, this, the book, obviously, but the TV series, I have to like really sort of check my breath when I'm watching that, especially early on when he has the accident. That's my personal fear.
I got to recommend, I don't know how you actually pronounce it, but the original version of Kingdom as well, if you can see that. It's Danish, I think, or something along. I have the DVD somewhere around here buried. Extraordinarily horrific. Has this phantom ambulance that goes around, which is a highly underrated thing. Like way more phantom ambulances in horror. And it's just fantastic. And as great as I think the Kingdom Hospital series is that we remade, the original, I remember seeing that and it just blew my mind when I first saw that.
Okay, Chuck.
I'm sorry, CJ took mine. It's so many. I mean, that's the thing. It's really hard to pick a horror book that doesn't kind of have the setting be just a core component, and whether that's because setting is so important to horror because we just ruin anywhere we set our story and we just make it evil by dint of it. Chris Golden is great with either Road of Bones, set in a, another cold location, a road in Siberia, or Ararat, another mountain. Haley, who's not here, No Gods for Drowning is fantasy ostensibly, but very much pickled in brine and horror. And the setting of that, if anybody's seen Arcane on Netflix, it has this sort of the vibe of that, and it's really rich and deep and blood soaked and briny, which just sounds weird. Certain authors really take like a place in which they've lived, or a place that was home to them, and kind of subverted it. Clay McLeod's Chapman's What Kind of Mother, what he does with the Chesapeake area and all the crabbing area that comes into that. Obviously King's Maine is a huge thing. For a sort of a weird subversion of it, Nat Cassidy's Mary, previous to Nestlings, sets it in a sunny desert climb, and it's the sort of thing that isn't claustrophobic and isn't almost like Sundial by Cat Ward. The same sort of like open, it turns this place that's sun-baked into a terrifying, agoraphobic nightmare. So it's hard to kind of pick a great horror novel that isn't in some way steeped in setting.
The second you said Brian, I was like, are you going to bring up Clay's last book?
Have to bring up Clay.
That one, you could smell the crab. For me, The Woman in Black by Susan Hill, which is, I think that was the late 70s or early 80s. It feels much older than that.
Yeah.
And it's just that one really, really gripped me with its, individual person crossing a little sandbar to a house. And then every night the water comes in and gets rid of the bridge back to civilization. And then of course what happens on that sand bridge. That's a fantastic one. And then another one for me that just has stuck with me was The Grip of It by Jack Jemp. It's a haunted house. It's a couple, and some of the things that she does with some of the stuff that happens in the night I had never seen before. So that one, again, that one was very, very good, very claustrophobic. Haley asked me to mention Johnny's book, The Spite House. And she said that, is it the Masson House or the Mason House, Johnny?
I say Masson, but I don't correct people if they say Mason.
No, that's it. She said the Masson House in that book is utterly chilling and uncomfortable. It's exactly what writers study if wanting to improve their work with atmosphere and horror. So I'm one of those people. So I have the book. So that's my next read. And then another one I was going to bring up just when Johnny, you mentioned, the mountain and how that, you start there. This isn't a book, but The Descent, the movie, right? Like even before the cave goblin people showed up, I was like, this is enough. This is claustrophobic enough. This is enough for me. And then of course you add cave goblin people and it jumps up a level.
I might add one more if I may, thinking about like the sort of like subterranean thing. I talk about this book all the time because it's like in my top five ever, but The Changeling, Victor Laval, he does this. It's another New York one, but like he does this thing where like almost every scene after a certain point in the book they're going underground, even if it's like five steps down into a Starbucks, or like, it's just this, like, you start to get this feeling over and over again of just like sinking. And it's so good. I think that's like a perfect book, actually, just all around. But I love the underground thing.
Yeah, that's a great book. The sense of descent there is perfect.
Oh yeah.
There's another one. We could probably just do cave books. there's another one which I don't know if you guys have read this, The Luminous Dead by Caitlin Stark. Kate Starling, sorry. I might have the name wrong. I read it a long time ago, but that one is interesting because there isn't a big, I saw the cover, I went in expecting a big, I guess almost supernatural essence to it, because of course it says the luminous dead. I'm like, okay, here they come. The luminous dead are coming. And that one was really just, for the most part, all atmosphere and all setting until the very end, some stuff goes down, but it had me looking around every corner, so to speak, as I was reading, I turned the page. I'm like, what am I going to get hit with? And that one legit scared me without a lot actually happening. So that one's a really good example for people who want some good subterranean horror, some more subterranean horror.
There's a novel actually called The Descent by Jeff Long, which is sort of an expeditionary story. It's a little bit Michael Crichton-y. I mean, it's very horror, but it's got that sense of like, well, there's something living down there that has been living there for a while, and it may sort of speak to our myths of hell and demons, but they're literal actual creatures / people down there in the dark.
So. And that one, that came out like maybe 20 plus years ago, didn't it?
Well, I mean, somewhere in that space.
Okay, yeah. I think I read that and remembered.
There was a sequel to it, if I
remember. Okay, okay.
It's been a while. But
yeah. Yeah, that one scared me for sure. Okay, so, another question that I posed to the group is, unexpected settings for horror. Are there any examples you can think of big swings that worked? And what are some examples where horror occurred in an unexpected place, which begs the question, which is, of course, is there such a thing? I don't know. Maybe there isn't. Maybe horror can happen everywhere, but it's a conversation starter. So let's go ahead. Catherine, do you want to jump in on that one?
Okay. Yes, I do think that horror can occur anywhere, nowhere safe, as you suggested. I think one of the things that's important as well in horror is the contrast. So we sort of touched on this a little bit earlier about places that apparently seem beautiful, whether it's a crumbling mansion or an outdoor setting, and yet the horror that occurs there, sort of, I think it's that contrast that works. So I thought of... I'm a real lover of the Gothic. So I chose Laura Purcell's Silent Companions as one example here. So it's partly set in an asylum, which is sort of a very typical place to set a horror story, but also in a crumbling country estate, which is like most people's idea of heaven. But I think I don't know if anyone's read that, but what sort of brought in the horror then is these silent companions, they are actually, or they were historically, inanimate objects that come to life in the story. They were common in the 17th and 18th centuries, and they are human-sized wooden boards, flat. So they're not paintings. They sort of layered up like a decoupage sort of thing. They were sometimes called dummy boards, and they create the illusion of a presence. And they were quite commonly used in homes, especially like mansions and that back in time. They were used to combat loneliness in these big houses, but in Laura Purcell's Silent Companions, they have a life of their own. And I think that's one of the scariest sort of tropes you can use, because, you've got the clowns and the dolls, and it just gave her a different sort of twist. And I like to deploy both anthropomorphism and personification in a lot of my own writing as well, because I even wrote a story from the point of view of a standing stone on the West Wales coast at Cromlech. so the Cromlech actually told the story. Because, like I say, it's the contrast between beauty and horror that enhances that creeping sense of dread. And that's what I personally love, you know. So that's my sort of bit, really.
You know, I wonder, you know, nowadays, if you have a horror story with a doll or a puppet, right, like we expect it. Like that's yeah. But who did it first? Like, I want to know, like, who was like, oh, wait. Like, what if I make this like amazing doll, make it evil and make it, you know, Chucky style? Who did that first? Because you got to imagine the reaction to that was like, oh my God, it's a doll. No one would have ever expected that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard to find anything original now because, like you say, everything's been done, you know, literally everything. But I thought that, you know, the fact that she used those actual pieces of history, sort of them being flat boards, just to put a little bit of a twist on it, and the mansion, she depicted the mansion so well, you know.
Okay, and Chuck.
I already mentioned Matt Cassidy's Mary. I think that really is just one of those places that the setting kind of contrasts so well with the horror going on in it, that it feels almost scarier because it doesn't necessarily feel like it should be scary. There's a novella by Delilah Dawson called Bloom, and it's essentially set in and around a farmer's market and also like this one young woman's little farm and her house, and it's all quite lovely and cottagecore until like the last like 20-15% of the book, where it gets real cannibally real quick. So it's like very jarring how sort of like that cottage core aesthetic used in such a creeping dread and then really bringing the thunder at the end super works for that book.
I love that, from cottage core to cannibal core. I'm here for that. I have to check that one out. I saw that one. CJ.
Okay, I have two that I think I've read both multiple times, and both of them I find continually surprising. One is Grady Hendrix's Horror Store, which is effectively IKEA. And honestly, you know what? Like, I'm saying it, and it's like, well, obviously, that's a horror setting. That's like where, what do they say? Like, where relationships go to die. You know, just kind of like all these things going down in IKEA. But that's a great book. I think that's kind of all you need to know about it. And then the library at Mount Char, which is one of my favorite books ever. And I love seeing nods because I feel like this, everybody needs to read this book. Like,
everybody needs to read that book.
Yeah. Right.
Everybody.
It's crazy. But it's, I love the like suburban setting, you know, it's sort of like this like contained suburb in which a lot of weird shit goes down, and it's just fabulous. And visually, like, I can still see everything in my head so clearly. It's just, I love these like happy, bright settings, you know, that sort of like you were saying, Chris, like that almost like midsummer feeling.
Yeah.
It's like nothing bad should be happening, and yet everything bad is happening. So
that the library at Mount Char, oh my God, it's one of those books, I call them carry around books, where you get one where you're just like, any second I can get, I'm reading a page. And that book just, I still could, that's a book you can't spoil. Right, you could try to spoil it, and you could never do it. I mean,
I was just reading a few pages from it today, and just like blown away by how fucking weird it is. But it works. Like, weird cannot work, right? You're just like, it's weird for the sake of weird, and it feels like it's kind of just going off on all these directions. But boy, it just brings it all together. It's so good.
So that has a penny drop ending,
page, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, all like last sentence, you're like, fuck. He did it, you know?
And then, like, disappears. And then that's it. Yeah. Like, that's Library at Mount Char.
Yeah. And it's emotionally crushing, too. It's so powerful at the end. I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. It's brutal and disgusting and brutal. And anyway, it's by Scott Hawkins, folks. So go check out the Library at Mount Char. Hopefully he writes something else. Because he just, like, wrote that. And then walked away.
I think he's written some books on like Linux programming or something.
Yeah.
You want to read that? Yeah.
I always pitch that book as if it's someone took like an urban fantasy story and wrote it as a horror novel. Because urban fantasy is always like, kind of got the trappings, the same trappings of Mount Char, but it's written as if it's kind of serious, like it's grim and blood-soaked. And
yeah, this one, it goes so hard, right?
And the best villain, the best.
Yes.
The best in the two, I can't.
Yeah.
I love
yeah, that, yeah, Michael, right? That's Michael.
David.
Isn't it? David. Okay. Yeah. David
with the blood helmet and the tutu and the combat boots.
My God. We could talk all day about Library of Mount Char.
Is it now just a panel about that?
Yeah.
It is. It's so,
hello.
It's so good. It's so good. Okay, Johnny.
Oh, man. So I thought we were just going to do the Mount Char, just keep it running. I had kind of struggled with this because I tend to think of horror existing everywhere. I have horror brain, I like to call it. So it's like not too surprising to me, but my first thought was like really far out, and now I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but it's a short story by Joe Hill where a man skydives and lands on a solid cloud, which is, I mean, you can't get more unusual as a setting than that. And he's stuck on this solid cloud and realizes other people have actually gotten stuck here before. And I'm pretty screwed unless I figure out how to get down safely. What am I even going to do? It's very bizarre. It's almost more surreal than horror based on the setting, obviously. And then I just read The Militia House, which I think the idea of military horror and that's a little more unusual. There have definitely been stories that have that setting, but it is a little bit more unusual to find the idea of incorporating specifically and explicitly supernatural or preternatural horrors in the realm of war, which is already horrific. I think most people think, well, that's, you don't have to double down on that. And I can understand if you're coming from the perspective, but I want to respect, you know, what actually takes place in war and not do that. That said, I'm all for, you know, double down, triple down, whatever. You know, if it's already horrifying, you can always make it more horrific. One of my favorite movies is His House, one of my favorite horror movies that came out on Netflix a couple of years ago. It's literally one of my favorite horror movies. And it's also got the trappings of warfare and genocide and the immigrant experience combined with supernatural horror. I don't think you have to shy away from those things. You can combine those. But what I ended up falling back on, ultimately, I know I'm giving multiple examples, but what I ended up falling back on was The Elementals, which is one of my favorite books by Michael McDowell, which is set along a beach, basically a beach house, a family beach house that's supposed to be an idyllic, kind of like what Catherine mentioned. You know, you have certain places that are supposed to be, she mentioned the crumbling countryside house, the place that's supposed to be your getaway, your idea of paradise. This is a family beach house, but off, and it's very isolated on the Alabama coast. It's lovely, but off to the side, there's also another house that's being basically overtaken by the beach. The sand is swallowing that house, and there's already that's not where most of the action takes place, but there's an immediate ominousness surrounding that. You can tell there's something else going on here. Why is that house being swallowed basically by all the sand? And it continues from there in an incredibly creepy and satisfyingly scary fashion.
I have not read that. That sounds pretty amazing.
I love it to pieces. I can't recommend it enough.
Okay. Keeping a list here.
Yeah. I was going to say it'd be good to have a list at the end.
Yeah. You know, actually, in our comments, Liz Tabler said, what about Misery?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You know, your biggest fan, I mean, the home of your biggest fan should be a great place. No.
Yeah.
Right. Chuck. I, you know, discussing this, it makes me think, you know, it's sort of there's probably a science to it, but of course, right now it probably feels more like an art, which is you could probably take any setting, twist it just enough, turn the dials just enough to take it from comfortable and nice and idyllic to horrific. Midsummer is a great, you know, example of that. Can anyone think of any or give us some examples of a setting that, well, I think IKEA, that was probably a really good example of, you know, Horror Store by Grady Hendrix. What are some other examples where we have something that's very just plain everyday rote, you know, and it's just tweaked a little bit to make it into something that we go, whoa, not that. I know I'm putting you all on the spot with that one.
I think there's something to, it's not really a specifically a book literary thing. In fact, it may be actually kind of tricky to do in a book. But that sort of concept of interstitial areas, liminal spaces, there's an the sort of creepypasta component of the back rooms. I don't know if anybody has ever looked up the back rooms, just sort of endless maze of like almost cubicle type workplaces. It's the same way that like IKEA works for Horror Store, because like on the one hand, IKEA on the surface just doesn't feel like that's a horror story. But then, like you say, like, it's obviously a nightmare. It's like you go in there and you're like, this is like, it's like an uncanny valley version of a house. Like you're like, no one lives here. It's clearly a trap. We're all just going to circle this place into hell. So, you know, I think if you Google stuff about the back rooms, you will find some, and some people have made some little like homemade movies on YouTube and stuff, and there's been games. It's just this kind of bland, creepy, endless labyrinth of nothing. And it's pretty spooky.
I've got one. Have you all read any Sayaka Murata?
No.
She is. Okay. So like, I don't think people consider her writing to be horror, but I think that they should. I believe it's all translated into English. But she has three books out. Convenience Store Woman, Earthlings, and Life Ceremony. And Earthlings is one of the most fucked up, amazing books I have ever read, like ever. And she takes very mundane scenarios and kind of like I don't remember what she calls it, but like something like she calls society like the baby factory. Or it's sort of like these ways of looking at things where you're like almost an alien, but you have to live in it. And she makes everything about the everyday feel simultaneously very exciting, but like really messed up and like really sinister and really like it traps us. So very highly recommend. But a lot of grocery store settings, a lot of like, you know, apartments and city streets and just kind of like our day to day kind of like turned on its head.
A grocery store at the middle of the night with flickering fluorescence. It could be bright still, and you could be in the produce section surrounded by gorgeous apples, and it can be completely, completely haunting. Can you give that author's name again?
Sayaka Murata, Murata. And that's just me not speaking clearly the first time.
No. I actually spelled it right. I spelled it right. You got it. You know, I'm going to say, okay, look, the inside of a whale is horrific, but it was, okay, but I hadn't seen it done until I read Whale Fall. And you know, to hear Daniel Krauss talk about it, you know, he's like, I don't know if it's horror or adventure or whatever. And I'm like, it's horror, bro, okay? He's trying to break out of a whale with a squid's beak, okay? so that's sort of my example, although I'm cheating because that's a totally expected place for horror, but he just put someone there.
Well, it's unexpected in the sense that no one would ever think of actually trying to pull that off. I mean, it's Pinocchio and Jonah, except for Daniel decided, what if I make this as realistic as yeah, humanly possible? And it's so much more horrifying when you're actually feeling like you're trapped in there inside this whale, and I don't know if this guy's actually going to get out.
I love when you know, he did major deep dive.
Yeah.
He did such a major deep dive. Guys, I'll be here all week, but you know, he said, you know, he met with all of these whale scientists. He did a dive. He learned how to do all this stuff, and then because of that, he was able to take some things and just put these little touches on the book. Like, for instance, right, the chapter headings are his current air pressure, mm-hmm, right? And it just keeps counting down and counting down. And so, yes, that is a horror book, Daniel. I love that. That was Whale Fall for anyone who didn't catch that. All right. So I have a craft question, which is to say that we all do some of our best learning by reading the work of others. Can you identify a particular technique or craft point or something you noticed when you read it where you went, wow, that was really, really smart. That was really a really unique way of doing X, Y, or Z when it comes to setting or atmosphere that you noticed that you said, you know, I'd like to deploy something like that in my own work. Or even if you didn't want to deploy it in your own work, can you give an example of someone who just did it really well? Chuck.
Oh, no. I'm not ready.
You can pass.
Man, that's a good question. Like, so what they did, like something in their craft, you're saying, something that they took to the page.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I'm always in awe when anyone ever uses present tense to kick some ass. And because I think that's always sort of a really urgent, messed up way to write. It really just puts you into it. Keith Rawson's Fever House.
Yeah.
That's, it's craft or craft adjacent, but that is a book that like kind of isn't settling into a single genre. And it takes you on this journey of like, well, it's crime and it's Portland and there's this crime scenario, but then it's like clearly horror, but then it's like a weird, creepy sort of like government black ops thing. And then it's back to the crime and into the horror. And then it's like a rock and roll memoir. And the fact that he's constantly just taking these, like, I like all of these things. Like, I'm really fond of any author who is, in any story that gets kind of greedy with itself and is willing to just be like, I don't care if I should do this. I'm just going to take all of these things that I love and that obsess me and make me feel things and make them kiss. Like, right. I want them all in one space to do this thing. And Fever House is a really good example. And then I had no idea there was a sequel coming out when I finished that book. And I was just like, man, that book. And then everyone's like, there's a sequel. I was like, what? So I'm very excited about that. So that would be my choice.
I've heard amazing, amazing things about that
really
book.
Great, really great.
Yeah.
Over and over again. Good.
I'm mad I didn't write it.
So good.
So good.
Well, then, CJ, how about you? Other than Fever House, any examples?
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, like somebody brought up Misery. I mean, look, Stephen King, like when I read The Shining the first time, there's one paragraph where the snow falls, one paragraph where you realize this family is going to like get kind of like trapped in this place and buried in this place. And that's it. And it's just like the snow's coming down. It's totally like silent. And you're like, oh my God, everything is about to go down. And I think about that a lot. And I think The Shining, both, I know it's controversial, but like both the book and the movie, I think are two of the greatest examples of setting and that I've ever encountered in my life. And also like, one thing I'll say about the movie that I find really interesting, and I know we keep coming back to, is like every scene pretty much is brightly lit and colorful. And like, it's really not this dark, like, you know, like gray and black atmosphere that we're so accustomed to that I love. It's really like, it's loud, it's well illuminated, it's shiny, it's clean for the most part. And I think like that is so interesting and really shows, you know, blood spatter in a beautiful way. But yeah, I think you know, we've all probably learned a lot from Stephen King, but that snow falling moment really kind of fucked me up.
Don't underestimate the value of a well-lit venue for your horror. You know, I mean, I love it because it's as close as we can get nowadays, maybe to surprising our reader a little bit, you know? If you can do it in the broad daylight, I mean, Midsummer was another example you guys threw out. Catherine, what do you think?
I think I've learned a lot as far as sort of the folk horror elements of my writing go from one of my favorite folk horror writers, Andrew Michael Hurley. This one is Devil's Day, but he also wrote two others that are not springing to my mind at the moment. The Lonely, that was another one. He's really amazing at, you know, sort of use in isolation and the dark aspects of nature. So again, coming back to the contrast and the fact that these settings are absolutely beautiful, and yet he picks out the dark elements and he writes about them so well. So that's definitely highly recommended, all three of his novels, The Lonely, Devil's Day, and the third is not springing to mind at the moment. Someone help me in the chat. Anyway, someone will probably pop in now.
I'll let you know if I see one.
Yeah. And another one, Kate Moss, she usually writes, well, historical fiction, and this is historical as well, but this is her most sort of horror piece of writing, again, gothic horror. And this one is set, again, a rural setting on the marshes, close to the sea. And most of the story takes place in her father's, it's called The Taxidermist's Daughter. So her father is an alcoholic taxidermist, and a lot of this book takes place in his workshop, and she's losing her memory and so on. It's quite complex, very, very dark elements in here, to do with child abuse and so on. But that she's also excellent at pace, and I like to study how, you know, different authors use pace and sort of short sentences and fragments and so on. So she's another one I learn from. The third one I have is this again, as you were saying earlier, CJ, about sort of what is horror. This one, Elif Shafak, 10 minutes, 38 seconds in this strange world. It's actually Psychoclaster's literary fiction or psychological fiction. But to me, you can't get much more horrific than this. It's about a sex worker named Tequila Layla, and she's murdered and her body's left in a dumpster in a little alleyway in Istanbul. So this book is actually the last 10 minutes of her life before the final neurons of her brain phase out. And again, I'm coming back to contrast, because in that 10 minutes, she knows she's dying. She knows her heart has stopped beating, but she's got these little impulses firing there still. And during those minutes, she takes you through her life in Turkey. So there's a lot of beauty in the story as well, from sort of where she was brought up in the rural parts of Turkey, and a lot of the Turkish culture and so on comes through. But it really is horrific as well, because her body's just in this dumpster and she's waiting for her friends to find her, you know? So that's another one that I feel I learned from as well.
Who's the author again?
Elif Shafak. She's not really a horror writer, but this to me is horror, you know?
And I think one of our folks, Robert Kluver, said Starvaker is another Starvaker, early.
Yeah, Starvaker, yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Okay. Johnny, your turn.
Yeah, man, some great suggestions. Hard to follow up. I immediately thought of Mexican Gothic by Sylvia Moreno Garcia.
Yeah,
in particular, I mean, I love any kind of Gothic fiction. I think that's one of my favorite books that I've read, I think, in the 21st century. And she does this incredible thing, obviously, just some of the things you're familiar with the idea of the Gothic and its opulence treated as horrific. And even if it's not necessarily outwardly decaying, even though it kind of might be in places, you could tell that it's built upon a moral decay. So using the setting thematically in that fashion. But then the thing I craft-wise love when somebody can do this, and I'm envious of it. I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a revelation toward the end that hammers home in a sense of what the menace of the house has been this entire time and what's happening in this setting. And then you realize exactly the true nature of it. And once that revelation hits, and it just really kind of made me have to stop reading for a moment and regroup my thoughts on, okay, what have been all the indicators of this previously? And now we actually have this. And I love that. And it escalates how horrific things have already felt and takes it to another level. And I love anytime a story can employ escalation where you already think things are really bad, they can actually still get worse. And they hit you with the surprise of how it actually got worse or how it's been worse the whole time and you didn't even know it. It kind of takes me back to the old school, the urban legend of the boyfriend and the girlfriend stuck on the road. He goes out to get gas or what have you. And then there's been like tapping or dragging sounds on the roof that whole time. And it's not until she gets out that she realizes he got killed. He's been hung from a tree. He's been on his feet have been dragging across the roof the entire time. And I, heard that when I was a kid. And I think that's where I fell in love with this idea of like, things could always be worse. And sometimes they've been worse. And you didn't even realize it until you like are leaving the situation. And like people are telling you, don't look back. And you look back and it's like, oh my God, that's been happening the whole time. He's been dead this whole time. He's been above me this entire time. And she pulls that off, I think, in Mexican Gothic, where you've been living with this thing that you already thought was really horrific and scary. And now it's magnified by what you really understand of the house by the end. And that's what you've been within this entire time. It's just truly unsettling. And I'd love to kind of employ that technique at some point.
I love that because it doesn't feel like a cheap twist. It's there's enough that it's been there the whole time. And so it feels much more substantial when that revelation happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I guess for me, I find wallpaper to be something I like a lot. I think wallpaper is just creepy as shit. It happened to me once where I was traveling for work and I was giving a talk. My day job is I'm an attorney, and I was giving a talk to all these trial lawyers in West Virginia. And I drove to some place. I landed like midnight. I drove to this place where they were having this big conference, and it was at this like palace in the West Virginia mountains. I'm sure someone knows about this place. And it apparently is the place where Congress will evacuate to if they need to. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That fucking place. Let me tell you about this place. It is, you go in and the front desk and the whole like welcome area is underground. And I went around Easter and there was this big Easter display set up with all these giant stuffed bunnies. And I was like, this is where you're supposed to leave in the movie. This is where you turn around and you go. But I had no choice. And I go in and I go and the hallways are all like densely wallpapered, dense. And there's signs everywhere that's like after 8:30 p.m. is quiet time. And then I got to my room and there's like even worse wallpaper. So I've been kind of stuck on wallpaper for a while. And of course, it's been employed very well by Charlotte Perkins, is it Gilman? In her short story, The Yellow Wallpaper, which really got me because I had already been to the Greenbrier by the time I read that. So I like wallpaper. I try to employ it. I don't try to overdo it, but if I can use wallpaper, it's going to be there. And then probably the thing that stuck with me for till now, and I even have it printed out like by my printer, is the whole thing, because I want to memorize it sometime. The whole thing. This is the script from The Crawler from Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer. When I first read that and the biologist is going down in the tower, which is a hole in the ground, and you start reading this script from this crawler thing, I mean, my mind was utterly blown. It's like this pseudo-religious gibberish, doomy nonsense that she would go back and go deeper into that thing. And that was the device, was she'd keep going back and go deeper and read more of this like glowing mushroom language. And I absolutely loved it. Anytime I can find an opportunity to write out some gibberish that's creepy, I will absolutely do it. So for me, that's my big craft point that I stole from Jeff Vandermeer. and one other thing, CJ mentioned, of course, The Shining and the well-lit, the hotel and everything. It made me actually think of Hereditary. And I think Johnny was talking about the opulence. That house that they live in Hereditary is a gorgeous, beautiful house. But they have lit it only with like these little lamps throughout the whole thing. So it's very warm and inviting. And then like when you start to see the things moving in the shadows, it kind of changes your whole perception of it. So Hereditary for me was a big one. We are getting near our time. So let's do this. If you have a question, throw it in the chat. Let me see if I've got anything that's up there yet. I've seen several recommendations for the September house, House of Leaves. House of Leaves, of course, was incredible. Okay, someone, I have not seen this, but Reggie Lutz said, unexpected horror, Boba Hotep. Has anybody seen Boba Hotep? No, that's that's by Lansdale, right?
Yeah.
I have. It's been a long time, but yeah, I think that's the one. It's set in a retirement facility, right? An old folks home,
yeah.
I believe. So yeah, definitely an underutilized, unusual kind of setting. I think there was some other movie recently that came out that also takes place in an old folks home. I haven't seen it, but I think I remember seeing a description of it, and I can't remember if it's like it's kind of there's kind of a trend of people versus zombies or unexpected people becoming zombies. So, and I might be wrong, but I want to say it was like either zombies versus an old folks home or zombies, like the old folks home becomes the zombies and like the few survivors have to navigate it. Something to that effect. If I'm remembering correctly, I might've had that might be a fever dream. Who knows?
But well, that hasn't been done. I love that. Cause the people in the retirement home, they don't give a fuck, man.
Right. You exactly. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of people like kind of a underrated quality to the people that are living there and overlooked, and you could really explore some different angles and different perspectives with something like that, I think.
But
yeah, that's definitely something that takes place within Boba Hotep amongst just a wide range of strange, deliciously Lansdalian choices made in a Boba Hotep.
Yeah, that actually, now I'm like, oh my God, why hasn't someone done the sort of forgotten people in the nursing home? You know, well, maybe someone has. If someone has, let me know.
I've written a short story about a nursing home, and that's soon to be published. I'm not allowed to say where because I haven't signed the contract yet. It's on its way, but it'll be somewhere really nice coming soon.
Oh, that's awesome. You were channeling our panel, but you didn't even know it. Okay, here's a question from Elizabeth Tabler. Chuck, how did you develop the setting in The Book of Accidents?
Sorry, I was going to start talking and I was muted. The setting, as in, the whole area or the house. I don't know. It's sort of modeled on where I grew up. I mean, that's this sort of. It's a book that's very much about cycles of trauma and cycles of abuse and just the weird folklore that settles into an area and how it ties to this one specific family. And I won't spoil it beyond that, but it's really just, you know, I used where I grew up because where I grew up is here, Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And it's, the quote unquote cradle of the revolution, but it's got tons of history and folklore married to it. And that history and folklore is often quite dark and quite strange. And then, you know, just tying it to family and family life and kind of steeping it and marinating and all that stuff. So for me, it was just a really lazy process. I was like, if you're in it, it's creepy. And so I will steal it.
Well, you're supposed to write what you know. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't usually do that, but like this one felt like, you know, like I'm going to run with it. See how it goes.
I read it last year and loved it. I don't know if you remember me posting about it on Twitter.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Loved it.
I finished Wanderers, and now I've got Book of Accidents right back there, and I have to read Wayfarers. Boy, that one really got me too. In fact, just to say something about Wanderers, that's one where, to go back to what Johnny said, that was one where you think you know the story, and then at the end, there's another layer to the story that you get, and it just you just go.
Yeah, there are multiple layers of that where it has already gotten worse, and the character.
Yeah,
that's one of those where I was like, yeah, no, it's bad. And it's really what
I did. By the way, I did, and I did employ this in my upcoming book. I noticed in Wanderers, I did of course go and check to see if those tweets were real.
Oh,
and they are absolutely real. And so my advice to all readers is that if anybody puts tweets or a website or something in their book, go check it out.
Yeah, it's funny, I didn't do most of those. Other people did them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's very cool. And they're just right at the chapter headings.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a lot of little sort of epigrams or whatever they're called.
I love that. I love that. Elizabeth says, Wanderers is the stand for now.
Yeah, it's a current era.
All right, so let's go around, and why don't you each tell us what you're working on this year, what you've kind of got on tap, and also how people can find you on the internets if you want to be found. I'll go clockwise again, CJ.
So I've got, I can say the name of my book. I've got American Rapture coming in October. So Mayfly was an LA book. I do kind of want to set each new book in a new location, and, place is like what I really care about. So I was very stoked to do this, but, so American Rapture is my Wisconsin book. And I really love Wisconsin, and I really love Americana. So there's a lot of like roadside Americana there. I'm working on a Colorado book, and I'm working on a book that I cannot say what state it's in, but I got another one in the works, and just trying to kind of like paint a picture of Americana landscape, you know, kind of like slowly bit by bit. And I'm having a really good time doing it. And you can find me at cjlead.com, which I almost never update, but is very pretty. And mostly on Instagram, I would say.
Okay, Siege perfect. The moment
is my handle. You guys know.
Siege the moment. Siege
yeah,
the
anybody
moment.
Who cares probably knows. And everybody else, thanks.
All right, Catherine, what do you have coming going on this year?
This year I have a novella coming out in April with Dark Matter Inc., who published my recent novella Mosaic.
That has a great cover, by the way. I love the cover on that one.
It's called The House at the End of Laceleen Street. It's the strangest book I've ever written. And it was also the easiest book I've ever written because it just came from somewhere and flowed, which very rarely happens to me, especially in the middle. I'm one of those writers that gets stuck in the middle, but this one just kept coming. Basically, if I give you the little sort of blurb, Claudia Dance boards a bright yellow bus at midnight, destination Laceleen Street. No luggage, not even a coat, despite the icy rain that penetrates her clothing. Like her fellow passengers, she has no clue as to why she's leaving. In fact, she remembers nothing about her past. The answers she seeks can only be found in the red brick house at the end of the road, but the price she must pay for the truth is earth-shattering. So that one's coming out soon, 2 or 3 months. And my others are... again, I tend to write mostly gothic, and most of it is set in Wales. This one, Immortelle, was published with Off Limits Press. That's on the West Wales coast. And this one, A Moonlit Path of Madness, published by Nose Touch Press back the second half of 2023. All of those are gothic fiction. And I received my author copies today, so I've got to give her a little plug of the Wolf of Favour, which is a dark fantasy set actually in this house, because this one is about a 10-year-old girl who has Down syndrome. So this is more of a YA, well, actually a sort of middle grade YA crossover even into adulthood. She's a little girl who has Down syndrome and sort of adversities to overcome. And the house that I live in is more than 200 years old. It's an old farmhouse with a lane that runs, well, I say lane, it's a farm track that runs behind the house at quite a gradient up to an old farm. And the track is no longer used. It hasn't been used for decades. So the story takes place in the lane behind this house. It's a real magical sort of setting. And years ago, literally maybe 150 years ago, the farmers and the milkmaids would roll down barrels in the days before, you know, vehicles basically, roll down the barrels of milk and also homemade beer. And they'd roll them down the track all the way from the farm and sell them at the corner of my house to people passing by on the road. So there's an awful lot of history here. So I had to write a book that was based here. So, and then to find me, I'm mainly on Twitter. I still call it Twitter X. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook. I don't do as much on Facebook. And I have my own website as well, CatherineMcCarthyAuthor.com.
So have I seen your house on Escape to the Country? Because I watch a lot of Escape to the Country.
You haven't, but it is that kind of thing. But maybe not as big as and not as expensive as some of those. But
I highly recommend it if you want to just chill out for anybody. Escape to the Country.
I actually lived here for over a year before I realized that I had two attics. You know, well, you think you call them lofts there. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I think you just buried the lead on that. That's a
secret attic.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And Chuck, what do you got going on this year?
In the fall in September, I have my second middle grade, and it's a middle grade horror coming out called Monster Movie, and it's about a horror movie, a cursed horror movie that is itself a monster. And then I'm working on now my next adult horror, which is Staircase in the Woods. Which is about a group of kids in the 90s who find a mysterious staircase in the woods. One of them climbs it and disappears, and the next several decades, the rest of the kids are turned into adults and are trying to figure out where their friend went.
Oh, that sounds incredible. Nice. That sounds awesome. All right, Johnny.
I've got Devils Kill Devils coming out in September through Tor Nightfire. It is a very unlike Spite House in many respects. So I've been trying to give people a little bit of a heads up on that. I do appreciate how much love the Spite House has received. It's gothic and kind of more of a subdued, a little bit horror. And there's a lot more intensity and violence in Devils Kill Devils. Starting from the opening chapter, when the husband of our lead character on their wedding night gets his head crushed by the guardian angel of our lead character.
Does he make it?
No, unfortunately. Tries to pull through, but you know, after, gosh, man, it's really hard to survive when your head's been pummeled into the floor of the hotel like that. I mean, he probably could have made it. He just maybe wasn't trying that hard. Who knows? Some people can't deal with married life. Take the easy way out, I guess. So I've got that coming out. I'm really looking forward to how people receive that, hopefully, you know, very well. I'm working on a sci-fi horror novel or a sci-fi horror novella. I'm also working on a more of a detective horror story, and hopefully get some movement on those in the coming year. Always writing short stories, and hopefully we'll have some sales coming through this year on that as well. I can be found on social media, like CJ mentioned. I'm similarly primarily on Instagram for the most part, but anywhere social media, it's usually at Compton Writes, WRITES. And I also have my own website, like CJ, like Catherine. I'm pretty sure Chuck didn't mention all of his places to find him, because it's easy to find him. I don't think it's hard to find Chuck Wendig. So, but I also have my website, johnnycompton.com. And even though it's woefully neglected, I am also going to go ahead and say you can also, speaking of websites, I have a website for my terribly neglected podcast, Healthy Fears, which I'm also very proud of, but it's very neglected. And somebody just recently asked me if I was going to bring it back because they liked it so much. And I was very happy to hear that, while at the same time felt very embarrassed because it's only like 25, 26 episodes, something like that. And I had both seasons that I did promised way more episodes. And then at a certain point, I was like, well, I can't keep up with this. So the product that's out there, I'm really very proud of. Unfortunately, I've not kept up with it the way that I always said that I would. But
podcasts are hard, man.
Yeah. It's I overthink the hell out of everything. I don't want to even get into all of my own unfortunate imposter syndrome situations that have crippled my ability to maintain a steady podcasting schedule. But healthyfears.com. You can find all the episodes there and anywhere where you listen to podcasts as well.
Great. And Chuck, did you want to shout a place or two where people can find you, or just stay?
I'll be in your house, wherever you are. I'll just be there. Just look behind the curtains. In a
if anybody's got a second attic, Chuck will be there.
Yeah, I'll be in your second attic. Everybody has one. Terrible Minds in a Com is the easiest way to find me. And then from there, I don't know, whatever social media rises and falls in our current tumultuous era, I'll be there. But the blog is always a place to find me.
I'm seeing that, like, a great blog. Apples falling from the attic.
Yeah, of course, because I mean, yeah.
Bad apples. My novel, The Redemption of Morgan Bright, comes out in April. That is it's a story about a woman who has herself committed to a mental institution under false pretenses to try to solve the mystery of her sister's death. It's a extremely loose retelling of the story of Nellie Bly from the late 1800s, who was 23 years old when she assumed a false identity and walked into a state mental asylum in New York, which the spine on her to do that. And they tried to keep her there. So anyway, that's an amazing story. That's my novel. And I'm writing a bunch of other stuff and trying to sell that too. So just like everybody. And I have chrispanettiere.com, and then I'm Chris J. Panettiere on Twitter and Chris Panettiere pretty much everywhere else. So that's it. Let me see if I have any other questions. No. Does anybody have any did any amazing wisdom just drop into anybody's head that you want to give to our viewers before we sign up? Anything? Okay. Hey guys, thank you so much for participating. Thanks for everybody who came, and double salute. We'll see you guys later.